the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome. It's the world's greatest podcast. It's Seth Greenberg, Dan Dokic. Thanks for joining us. Tony Bennett coming on today. And when Tony Bennett comes on, we're going to be talking to one of the hottest, well, one of the teams in the country's coach who is among the hottest, if not the hottest in the country, non-Baylor and Gonzaga division. I don't know that anybody's playing better than Tony Bennett's crew, Seth. Not sure there is.
You know, here's the deal. Everyone talks about Tony Bennett. They talk about the defense. They talk about embrace the pace. They talk about the, you know, they own the tempo and rhythm of the game. I think the most underrated part of what Tony Bennett's been able to do is I think he's a brilliant offensive coach because it's more than just mover blocker. I mean, like, to me, he puts guys in positions to make plays and win. What he's doing with his offense, pulling Huff away, using him as a passer, how he moves Sam Hauser all over the floor, the way they pass the ball, the way they space the floor, the way they basically play basketball the right way. I mean, really, it sounds so simple, but he is so creative offensively. The different actions he runs into what I call read react or move, you know, it's incredible. No one talks about what he does offensively. That team that won a national championship, the defense.
Well, wait a second. Whoa. Okay, they're having a nice year offensively.
They're good offensively.
How many 40-point games do you got to play over the course of a year? Okay, Coach, they're having a nice year.
Here's where I disagree. I think those games are so low scoring because it takes forever for someone to get a shot against them. They have so few possessions in a game because not only do they suffocate you defensively, so it takes a long time to get a good shot, but then offensively they move you to get the shot they want. No one plays better late in the clock than they do. I mean, I just sat and watched Kentucky late in the clock. It was a joke. I'll tell you one thing. Virginia late in the clock, right? They know exactly how they're going to score, and they continue to do what they're doing. All right? It's not like one guy's dribbling and there's 15 seconds left or 12 seconds left or 6 seconds left, and we're going, all right, what do we do now? So, I mean, to me, I think that he is a really creative offensive coach. I think he gets those guys to buy in. I think they develop players, and we're going to talk to him about that. Here's the thing. You text me.
I agree with all that. But –
All right, here's my next observation. Is there a player that's had a greater impact on a team in all of college basketball than Sharif Cooper?
No.
Because, here's the deal, and I'm not a big numbers guy, you know, but I actually remember this. They score 44 points in the paint with him on the floor. They were scoring, 24 without him. He basically gives guys layups. I mean, he puts so much pressure on the defense. He sees plays early. He's kind of like mini-me John Morant. The guy just – he's changed the whole identity of this team. They play fast. They play with a purpose. He gets the ball to guys when they're open. And all of a sudden, Auburn, who's not allowed to play in the NCAA tournament because Bruce Pearl decided that they weren't going to go to the tournament this year when Sharif Cooper wasn't playing. That might be reevaluated, I'm sure. You know, he might say, you know, with the NCAA, we got to give him a chance to review our case. And he would sell it to us and we would believe it by the time he was done.
You would believe it.
Yeah.
I ain't believing it.
But I've never seen a
guy. Let me talk about
what one guy means to a team.
Here's the deal. Cooper, I did his first game. And he was great. Like, although Petty got in a stance, you know, and Cooper made some bad decisions. And I said at the time, this is unbelievable what this kid is. I did think that the kid would fall off after the first game. My experience has been a guy comes in and plays great first game, and then he falls off. Well, he hadn't fallen off. He's been absolutely fantastic. And to Auburn media and fans, you guys are showing yourselves to be idiots because, frankly, he's doing everything I said, except that I did think he would fall off a bit. But what are you going to do? And media people, particularly fan-sided people, have just been complete dumbass from Auburn to me, and they'll continue to be so, and I love it. But that dude.
It always goes back to you, of course.
Of course. Yes. That dude is 1,000% dynamic. That dude gets easy shots. And don't think for a second that Bruce Pearl opted out knowing or thinking that this kid was going to be that good. Like, it's one thing to be that good in practice, boss. Bruce Pearl, if I'm him, I got to rethink it. What did you just say? We're going to let the NCAA run its course.
Yeah, but basically, Bruce, you know, we overreacted. You know, we don't want to step on the NCAA's toes. You know, we understand that's their responsibility, and they need to look at the case, and, you know, then we'll react to that. But, you know, right now, I think we overstepped our boundaries, and that, you know, the decision we made, it's not our responsibility to make that decision. It's the NCAA's responsibility, and I apologize to the NCAA. I feel terrible that we decided to take it out of their hands and self-impose restrictions on us. And you know what? And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that, you know, that was the wrong thing to do. And because it was the wrong thing to do, I basically retract everything we said. And, you know, we are excited and look forward to playing the NCAA tournament. And hopefully the NCAA will resolve our issue sometime this summer.
I think you missed two things. There's got to be an element of the kids in there.
Yeah.
You know, No doubt. I'm not sure God should be in there or not, but it never hurts to throw.
Knowing Bruce, the kids, and God, and you know what else will happen? There will be a few tears. Because one thing about my man, and I love him to death, he can drop a tear. You know, Jewish guys, we cry easy. What can I say? I mean, like at the drop of the hat, my man, he'll get all welled up. I mean, he'll be crying, and you know what? The NCAA will say, you know, Almighty Bruce is crying. Put him in the tournament. It's good TV. All right.
Are they a tournament team?
Not yet, but they could play themselves into one.
No question. I agree.
I mean, like to me, they're scoring. They get easy baskets. They play hard. Flanagan and Thor, because of Cooper, have gotten more scoring opportunities. Every guy on their team is averaging more points now than they were before he got there. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's tremendous. You know, I mean, he might be, I guess, John Wall, but when have we seen him? We always forget guys, right? You always say this guy's the best since, you know, 1962 or whatever. But I'll tell you this, he reminds me a lot of Isaiah Thomas. When Isaiah was a freshman, as a sophomore, Isaiah Thomas got in a stance and guarded people. But as a freshman, Isaiah Thomas in college, the good Isaiah Thomas, used to go to the basket, lay it in, that kind of. I mean, he is fun to watch. I do want to get.
Reminds me of John Morant.
Yeah,
left-handed passes.
Yeah, better comparison. I always tend to put the greats to Isaiah when they're little because I think Isaiah is the best little guard. You know, but fair enough. Hey, Seth, I got to ask you about a couple of teams here. Memphis. Memphis has won a few in a row here. Yeah, and you know what? I'm doing their game on Thursday, and they're a bit of a mess still at different times offensively, but you get them in transition, that's a pretty good team. The other team we talked about was Virginia, but I also want to talk about where you at with Illinois.
This past week on game day, we had a like it, love him or leave him. And I didn't mean leave him out of the NCAA tournament. I meant leave him in terms of, I thought coming into the season with Iudasuma coming back,
Illinois
Cobra coming back, with Trent Frazier coming back, I thought they, you know, people were talking Elite Eight, Final Four. I mean, people in Illinois talking about Big Ten champions. So I said, in this moment in time, I've got to leave them. I got to leave them because if they're going to be that team, then they've got to win the games that are the tough games. They've got to win the games that are the possession games. They got to win the games against the best teams in the league. Now, the one thing I say is, I mentioned those three upperclassmen, but they're also relying on two freshmen. And if you look at their numbers and losses and you watch their games in their losses, they're not guarding anyone in losses. They're giving up like 81 points a game. Now, they are playing those two freshmen, and those two freshmen maintaining a defensive intensity, maintaining a focus, digesting scouting report to the level you have to in that conference, which is the best coach, the best scouted, the most competitive, the most mature conference in college basketball, where if you don't play well, you're going to get run. Michigan doesn't play well, Minnesota beats them. Minnesota doesn't play well, Maryland beats them. That's just the way it is. So I'm disappointed. I mean, they're an NCAA tournament team, and once they get in, who knows what's going to happen. But, I mean, you can't give up 81 points in losses. You've got to be a little bit tougher, and then they need more consistency out of Miller and Carmelo.
What about Memphis?
Memphis, I think, is a really good defensive team. I think they play hard. They compete. They can protect the rim. They can rebound it. They've got good length. I'm still not there because they play. Look, beating SMU is a good win, and Tim Jankovic is a good coach, and has done a good job. But I've got to see them play continually unselfishly. I've got to see them continually take good shots and not turn over the basketball. If I can see that for a couple more weeks, then you know what? I love the energy they play with, and I think they have the potential to be a really elite defensive team.
You know, we're getting into the point where, you know, wins, you know, the tournament coming in, you know, we've mentioned Illinois, certainly in the tournament, but, you know, North Carolina is starting to play better. They've been left for dead.
I'm percolating on North Carolina right now.
You've said that. Why?
I'm percolating for a couple of reasons. One, Kerwin Walton can make a shot. And because he's on the court, yeah, I think he had 10 yesterday, made 2 threes. Just because he's on the court and you know he can make a shot, you have to honor him. And your spacing is predicated by your ability to make shots. If you can't make shots, you can stand out there all you want. All right? Makes no difference. No one's guarding your rear end out there anyway. So therefore, your spacing stinks. So if you want to play high-low basketball, if you want to punch it into the paint, you know what? You're not going to have very good spacing if you don't have shot makers. So I think Walton's number one. I think Anthony Harris, even though his minutes are on a restriction, it seems, he makes the right play. He makes simple plays. He makes the game easier for RJ Davis. He makes the game easier for Caleb Love, who's playing better. They're getting more in transition. They're playing a little faster. Garrison Brooks seems to be playing better. They're making the offense feel them a little bit more by turning people over. So I'm high on Carolina. I think that Carolina's getting better, and I think they're playing with confidence.
Let me throw another team at you that I'm a little bit fascinated by because I think Lon Kruger's a great basketball coach.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. They just went into Texas last night and won. The kid Austin Reeves, the transfer from Wichita State, makes a great shot. They held off a comeback. I tell you what, there's a couple teams in that league, Florida being one. Well, Florida's in the SEC, excuse me. But I'll give you two teams, Florida of the SEC and Oklahoma of the Big 12. Seth, I think I'm percolating on those two. Like, that win last night moves them to 10-4 at Oklahoma, getting better and better and better. They're pretty good week. Beat Kentucky and Texas in the week, or at least in the last 7 days. What do you think about those two, Florida and Oklahoma?
I really like Oklahoma, and I've been on them for a while. I think their backcourt's good. I think Harmon is really good. Davion Harmon is really good. I think Gibson can really shoot it. I think their bigs block shots and run the floor and rebound. And Lon Kruger, yeah, I say he's the most underrated. Now, he's the most underappreciated because when you think about the best coaches in college basketball, he does it with he's done it everywhere he's been, and he's done it places that were non-basketball schools in a lot of ways. He gets guys to play for him. He gets guys to defend. He gets guys to share the ball. He gets guys to respect each other. He's a no-excuse guy. He's even-keeled every single day. So, I got Oklahoma beating Alabama. I think they play Alabama in the SEC Big 12.
I'm doing the game.
All right, I got Oklahoma beating Alabama. I think they'll defend, and I think they'll guard.
Would you agree with this? Like, in my experience as a coach, like, going to lunch with Coach Knight was hard. Like, it was hard. Being around me every day was hard. I guarantee you assistants being around your ass every day was hard.
But I always picked up the tab.
What?
But I always picked up the tab.
That made it easier.
I always paid.
Yeah, that made it easier then. But I swear to God, Seth, I've done games of Lon Kruger. I was with him in, I think, the Bahamas or somewhere. He just easy. Like, everybody in that program is comfortable. They do it the same way that me or you or Coach Knight would yell and scream to get it done. he just makes the whole thing. He and Rick Barnes to me. Would you agree with that?
You pump faked. The fire runs through Barnsley now. I mean, now Barnsley's a kinder, gentler, more religious Barnsley these days. He repents more. He has self-reflection more, but Barnsley can run hot. Coach Kruger's amazing. I played his golf tournament in Vegas a couple times. He's amazing with people. You know, every single practice is open. All his practice, like after practice, kids from the community are on the court shooting with his players. I mean, like we've all had, like when I was at Virginia Tech, my practice were open for the old guys that lived in town. They'd come and watch practice, and I'd sit around and BS with them. And they were great. But it wasn't open for just anyone and everyone. It was just like the old guys, you know, come on in, boys. You know, I mean, and they were cool. And at times I let students in. But coach, every single practice is open. And then after practice, like literally the people in the stands, they just come out and shoot hoops with the players. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, fraternities, sororities, makes no difference. They just he's an amazing communicator. He's so consistent in everything he does. So I agree with that. I think Mike White. It's a lot like that in terms of just sitting and talking with him. And Mike White is an easygoing guy.
I agree.
And Mike White is a guy that, you know, it's funny, you know, Billy Donovan had great success at Florida. But Billy Donovan also left Florida in a mess. I mean, his last year, they were not good. I mean, it's just the way it was. And Mike White was expected to win in the manner in which Billy did when he had it rolling. And, you know, he's done a good job, but he's a guy that, again, underappreciated, consistent in his approach, very good defensive coach. He's got a team that's more his personality now. Now, obviously, they went through a tragic situation with Keontae Johnson. But I think Florida's getting better. Who would have thought the Cassidy to get? I mean, like, he couldn't get in a game at Michigan. And, like, they won that game without him. All right, they beat Tennessee without him. But I'm not sure beating Tennessee is the great, you know. Like, I look at Tennessee, right. They can't score. They just can't. They play hard. They're unselfish. They're well-coached. Like, those dudes can't score. They just can't score. They get 60, it's a celebration.
I thought that win, though, without three guys, Scotty Lewis and Castleton and Johnson, was the best win of the year. Like, I just did. And then Seth, they backed it up on Saturday. You know, they backed it up at Georgia. Which, you know, I'm not saying Tom's team's great, but Tom's going to coach him up hard, Crane. I want to ask you, because this is one of my favorite stories.
Wait, one thing before you jump. You talk about Texas. Texas playing without Jericho Sims and Courtney Ramey and having a chance to win. Those Texas kids played together.
I know. Yeah, I agree.
Those two guys are good.
I want Shaka to just keep it going, because I'm tired of hearing that Shaka can't do this, can't do that. I mean, Shaka is your guy. You keep him, and it'll all work out. Hey, Seth, one of my favorite stories, you know, all of our colleagues want everybody to transfer and open the borders, and everybody in college basketball wants that. I particularly don't care, but I also say be careful what you wish for. It's one of my life's mottos. I love the fact that Drake is 14-0, and the kid Liam Robbins is having a great year, a really good year over at Minnesota. But I love the fact that Drake is playing as well when they had a guy, and you can say whatever you want, but a guy that said, hey, screw you, Drake, I'm going to the Big Ten. I think it's a good story.
Yeah, it's a good story. How about him coming out 17, coming off of COVID, and winning that game yesterday? The kid Penn was unbelievable. I mean, Heppel and Penn, and I'll tell you, that. And we had Coach on a rap show one Sunday. He loves his team. Like, he loves his team. Forget about he doesn't love his team because they're winning. I mean, he loves his team. I mean, you could tell he just enjoys being around them. He enjoys what, you know, how they treat each other. He enjoys being on the journey. He's had two great mentors, Dana Altman and Coach McDermott. I mean, those are two really good mentors, two really good coaches, two creative offensive coaches. It's, you know, they've got an identity. They play fast. They play freed up. But they play unselfishly. Different guys step up on different nights. They play a bunch of guys. Drake, not Drake, is they're good. I'm interested. Missouri State was having a good season, and you know, they came back on the road, even though there are no fans. Big time win. And I agree with you. Like, good for Liam Robbins, good for Drake. That's the way I look at it.
Right.
We got Tony in about 4 minutes. I want to do two things. By the way, I think Duke's getting a little bit better. I think Jalen Johnson, Matthew Hurt at the end of that game, they found two guys they can play through. That's two guys that Kentucky doesn't have to play through at the end of a game, which is a positive thing. The whole Coach K thing with the media a week ago, I understand how, you know, that people lost their minds. I actually don't understand how people lost their minds, because here's my deal. It's real simple. In an uncommon world, you're on a Zoom phone call. You're asked a question. I actually think down deep, he was not lecturing the kid. He was trying to put things in context. But I mean, I just think, like, here's the deal. You just lost a game. I don't know why this became a big story. To me, it's no big thing. And then people say, well, he's making $8 million. I don't care if he's making $8 or $8 million. If you think that's wrong, then it's wrong no matter how much money he's making. That's number one. So people throwing that up is a joke. All right. The second thing is, he was asked a question. He probably should have just said, you know, hey, I got to look at the film. When I look at the film, we'll figure out where we're moving ahead. But his tone wasn't bad. It mind boggles me that we've made this big deal out of it. It's a stinking question. If you say something negative to a media member, they lose their mind.
Seth, and I don't want to hear it's a kid reporter. I wasn't a kid when I went to Indiana. None of my teammates were kids. I mean, you know, little reporter guy maybe, but I wasn't. And the whole thing that I must respect, and I think you do too. I think we respect college kids, college athletes, college adults, whatever the hell you want to call them. I think we respect them more than other people do. Like, there's such a lack of respect when you think that some college writer can't handle what Coach K said. You just don't have any respect for college students, kids, athletes, adults, whatever you want to call them. You just don't. What he said was absolutely fine. The whining and moaning is simply because we listen to a vocal minority of whiny ass media people, of whiny ass people on social media. And I was incredibly disappointed that Coach K apologized. All right, Seth. Coach Bennett, Coach, last night, you guys, you probably won't use the word. I'm going to use the word. Kia Clark, 4 points, but he carved up Syracuse's own. Your team is scoring it, man. Anybody that says, Virginia doesn't score it, they haven't been paying attention. What's been the biggest difference this year, you guys getting the ball in the bucket?
I think, last year we won with our defense. We had a terrific front court defensively. And this year, I don't know if we're able yet to win with our defense. I go back to the year that we won it. We were really good on the perimeter, you know, scoring with Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy and DeAndre Hunter. And this year we're getting a little more shooting and scoring from our five, Jay Huff, four, Sam Hauser, three, Trey Murphy. So we're almost the opposite, so we can stretch it. And then guys like Kihei Clark, who's obviously playing well, he can use his penetration. And the other night against Syracuse, he was really good when he got the ball and made decisions. So we're a little inverted in terms of our shooting and stretching the floor comes from our bigger guys or our forwards more than the guards, which is kind of unconventional. But I think that's helped. And, you know how that goes as this thing goes. We've learned the hard way and gotten humbled against the Gonzagas, San Franciscos, and we're slowly getting better. But I like what we've done up to this point, but don't take anything for granted.
Coach, you've had so much success in mover blocker and running guys off those screens and playing off the flare on the weak side. And now all of a sudden you're inverting a lot, but I said this the other day and I don't want to embarrass you, but I'm not sure people understand how creative you are offensively and what you're doing. You know, you did your ball screen motion, you've done your other mover blocker stuff, but when you looked at your team this summer, and it was obviously an uncommon summer, I mean, there's some drastic changes in terms of the actions that you guys are running and the spacing you're playing off of. I know obviously Sam and Jay have different skill sets, but as you started to implement it, how long does it take for a guy that's maybe played a certain way to change and get comfortable with it?
Yeah, I think you guys are all coaches. You know, you look at your personnel and say, what gives us the best chance? And sometimes it's by trial and error, and you try some things and you say, oh, that's not working. And as you get a feel in the game, you have to make some decisions. And as I just mentioned, you know, our strength of our scoring comes in, you know, some different spots. So we're trying to just put your better players in spots where they get more touches, more opportunities to score or make plays. And so the things we're doing, you know, sometimes, as I said, it's by trial and error. We've done some things in the past like it, but I think a guy like Sam Hauser, who's in his, you know, senior year of basketball, is so smart. He was so well prepared and well coached, you know, in high school from he played under his dad, is from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, at Marquette. And so you get a guy who's really a neck up player, and he can figure stuff out. He was really good against the zone too, the way he moved the ball, was in and out of it. So it helps. Jay's been in our system for a while. He's seen things. Kihei has. So, you know, it's just adjustments on the fly. And I think they just, sometimes you try things and like, this is, it fits. You see it, it fits your eye, and up to this point it's worked. But as you go on, some defenses switch, some pressure more, some sag. So you got to have little variations. And, you know, as of right now, we got some guys that are comfortable in those spots. So we'll keep using it with some variations, as you said.
Tell you what else, Coach. I mean, and this goes back to Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy and those guys. You guys are shooting it in. Like, hey, Hauser may be the smartest dude in America from the neck up, but that dude was drilling threes last night too, man.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, the saying, shooting covers over a multitude of mistakes. And it's like, it's funny, someone asked me about our defense, and I said, our on-ball defense has gotten better. It's not perfect, but on-ball defense covers over a lot of multitude of mistakes on defense. You know, shot blockers, yes, they do, but shot blockers are there usually when someone's in the paint and they're on you, and then you can give up offensive rebounding. Our on-ball defense has improved, but yeah, when you're making some outside shots, it's just key. How do you get them? Can you get them the rhythm looks? And that can come and go, but it does feel good when some balls are going in. You have to do that against Syracuse or you're screwed. Coach knows that. You've been in that situation many times, as have I.
That's the one team in the league I couldn't beat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, we always played him in Syracuse. Jim Boeheim, all the years between the Big East and the ACC over a 9-year period, we played him. He never came to Blacksburg.
Why would he? Who in the hell wants to go to Blacksburg?
He came before I got there, and he basically came to, when we got into the league, he basically told, you know, the league office, I'm not going to Blacksburg.
Did he look at you like Greensboro? Was it kind of the same thing?
Yeah, I was Greensboro. There was nowhere for me to eat. I mean, it's just the way it was. It was unbelievable. But so, I mean, we had a hard time with him. And we lost him in the Garden once too, as well.
It's not going to stop, Tony. There's going to be three other sentences after this. We lost him in the Garden. Oh, no, we had him beat when we were at Syracuse. Hey. I tell you what, if Gordon had made a shot, it's coming. Hold on. It's coming.
Are you done now? So can I ask Tony something?
Yeah, I'm done.
I appreciate that.
I'm done.
Everything you do, Tony, is family-based, faith-based, you know, your pillars. How difficult is it to do the things you want to do in this environment with your team to help them grow across the board?
Meaning the COVID or just meaning the time?
Yeah, just the COVID and the restrictions and the protocols and everything that you guys are going through in this uncommon season. How much have you had to adjust, you know, basically the things that you've always done with your teams? Not maybe not just on the court, off the court, team building, preparation, because it's such an uncommon year.
Probably going better because they're seeing less of me. I think they're enjoying it more, you know. Get the coaches out of the way, man. Keep these guys away. No, it's I think it always starts with how you recruit. You got to make decisions when you put a team together. And that is, you know, like my father's influenced my career in so many ways. And I'll never forget that piece of advice when I told him I'm going to try to take the job and see what we can do at Virginia. He said, son, just don't take a shortcut on character. He said, you might be able to find more talent and quick fix it. But he said, in the long run, don't, you know, shortchange character. And so when you recruit guys, and we use the saying that you can go through adversity with, that you can lose with first before you win, it's never perfect, but that covers, it's kind of the ounce of prevention can be worth a pound of cure. you can handle things when you're going through dips and valleys. And the ultimate is, you mentioned Ty, Kyle, and those other players, when we, you know, we're humiliated or humbled in front of the national, the basketball world, and losing as a one seed, which happened, how they responded. And when you have guys, I think, that are the Sam Hausers, Kihei Clarks, Jay Huffs, they're about the right stuff, as most young men are, that makes a huge difference in unconventional times. And so I think that, you know, has been a key, and just fortunate. I mean, I got a great staff, and coaches get too much credit. I always say, when it goes well, and you guys, we know this, you get too much probably blame when it doesn't go well. It's just the reality of our business. So you just sort of hold it loosely, but the people you bring in matters, staff and players.
Coach, I'm going to disagree, and I know you're kidding, but with the whole, hey, they probably like it better not being around you. Kids would like it better not being around me or Seth, but you, no. I had a long conversation with Kyle Guy the summer after you guys won a championship, and it was in person, which is really different than on the phone, right? Because you can read people, what they're saying, what their eyes look like. And I've never seen a player have more reverence for a coach than he had for you, and not as a coach, but as a man, and your faith and all the stuff that you stand for. I've never really seen that. So given that, you end up having a special relationship with that group, right? Because they were with you a long time. Have you ever really seriously delved into taking a player that's going to be there for 1 year, or taking a player that's, you know, I know everybody wants a one and done, everybody would take Zion Williamson, but given what you do with relationships, I hate that I'm asking this long question. Do you ever go into that realm in your mind with your staff?
No, that's a fair question. Good question. I think, you know, we've had some two and duns, three and duns, different guys. I think Coach Bray always says, you know, get old, stay old. That's kind of been his philosophy. I watched my dad do it at Wisconsin. I was with Coach Ryan at Wisconsin. The success we've had has been maturity, sometimes redshirting guys, getting them to their upperclassmen years. Nowadays, man, that's harder and harder. And if these rules pass, one times transfer, all these things, your challenges are there. So can you have them for 2 or 3 years? I would consider it if it made sense, but there's a ripple effect when you do that. With the players, you bring in someone, and then that guy who was that sophomore, and you have to count the cost with everything. And then it's not as easy to be a one and done. I mean, there are some, but let's be real. And I'm not saying this disrespectfully. I was a backup point guard in the NBA, and maybe the game's changed, but it's hard to go in and be ready. And I know the NBA, they look at talent, but you get one crack at that and you want to be right. Maybe it's one and done's that's tricky. So there's so few of those guys that can just go and legitimately do it. I think you have to think a little different now. Is it 2 years or 3 years? But if it's a great one and done and it made sense, maybe. But I would, you know, we haven't been able to get those guys. I haven't really recruited them. I tried to recruit Kyrie Irving when I came in the league, Coach Greenberg. He was not interested in Virginia. you know, I got Klay Thompson, but all the guys I got were almost either out of the top 100, or they're guys like Joe Harris, DeAndre. They've just evolved and they got good. I'd rather try to find those guys, because unfortunately in our society, those guys who are great coming out, unless they're so strong, the stuff that's coming in and the stuff they have to deal with is not right for a 16 or 14 year old, the 18 year old mind to handle that. Adulations, too much.
Coach, can I follow up, Seth, with a question? Because this is, I've never asked a guy this, but again, I'm 1,000 years old, but in my recruitment, and then my recruiting kids after that, I would say, look, here's how you're going to play. You know, as a freshman, yeah, we got this senior, but you're going to learn and work, and then he's gone. How do you handle, I don't think you really do it, but how do you handle, okay, I was recruited that way, where my sophomore year, I'm going to play, whatever, but all of a sudden you bring in somebody from wherever. You've done that with Hauser. How do you have to talk to guys that are maybe in line behind him?
No, I think, again, you never, whatever you say, you under promise, over deliver. But I don't think you start getting into that when you bring it in and say, you'll get what you earn. I've got examples of, you know, guys from their first year came in and played. And I've had guys example that they've waited and they've almost transferred. If every player is real, even if the guys, Kyle guy, maybe he's the exception, but Joe Harris, to ask him, all right, your freshman year, how many times do you think a transfer, like, oh crap, I made a mistake, coach is on me, whatever, or this isn't the right place. It's reality. They're going to think that way. And so I think as real as you can be on the front end saying there is opportunity, but I can't promise you. Now, I think, like you said, look, here's the thing. In your sophomore year, we're going to need you. The first year, if you're ready, you play. Some guys, it just makes sense. But I think you got to be so real, because I would hate then in that next year and they're, or you don't play them and then they're looking at you like, you told me this. So one thing, I make a lot of mistakes. Guys don't like me. Certain things, I get all that. But they can't ever say, you said this and you lied to me about it. I maybe make mistakes and I'll apologize. I do make a lot. But that part, I think, is that's a hard line you got to be careful of. And most kids you want to coach respect that. They do. And they want to play, but there's a reality there. So, again, I got more questions than answers, and you guys have been through it. But that's a tough, tricky thing, and more in today's microwave society, right?
I think it's the ripple effect you're talking about. It's the ripple effect. You know, you take a kid, now you got to deal with this kid. That's a tough thing.
The transfer thing's going to be interesting if that – it sounds like – well, although someone told me there's some – perhaps it might not. I don't follow all that.
It might be delayed. It might be delayed. But I mean, the problem is these elite kids, these one and done quote guys, they think that it's a rite of passage to get to the NBA. And they don't understand, just like you go from high school to college, you know, college basketball looks pretty easy on TV. Once you get there, it's a lot harder. And then from college to the NBA, they always have someone who has static that's going to tell them what they want. Some of the kids are going to tell them what they want to hear. And you talk about get old, stay old. Over the last 4 or 5 years, the teams that are standing at the end aren't reliant on really one and done players. They're reliant on teams that have maturity and shared experiences and things of that nature. And, you know, like one and done's, I guess, tying into Dan's question, like if you have one and done in your program, wouldn't you worry that that person might have a different agenda than the good of the group? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I think reality is look, we're all self-centered. We're all thinking about ourselves. You're dealing with that all the time. And I remember one of my early years, one of my assistants said, I want an honest question, an honest answer. How many of you think you're playing in the NBA? And I think, you know, 10 of the 13 guys raised their hand. And this wasn't at Virginia, but I was like, are you freaking kidding me? You know, like, you know, I heard that was a poll of Division II guys. So everyone has their agendas and their dreams. And I want guys that want to be in there. But I don't know. I think as long as it's, you know, about they want to win, but you have to acknowledge we're going to go after this. Guys want to have a pro career. If you're good enough and it makes sense, just make a sound decision. Trust what the right people are saying. Here's your status. There are a few guys that are good enough to go and play, but you can get chewed up and spit out if you're not ready for that. And so again, sound decision. But yeah, I mean, you're always battling those things, and that gets into the character piece. If people are honest, I want to be a one and done. Here's the deal. All right, then you know that going in, and you talk about that. So, but I think everybody's thinking, how can I bounce and get to that next job, that next the NBA deal.
And let me just follow up. By the way, you're looking more and more like your dad every day.
Oof.
But I know how much your dad watches your teams play and is involved in just emotionally as your team play. What's the best advice your dad ever gave you?
He's watching less and less. Unfortunately, he gets all worked up. The best advice, the best thing I observed, I told you what he said about don't take a shortcut in character, but this is it. And I maybe have mentioned it a few times before. When I played for him, he was, you know, influenced by Coach Knight a lot. And he, you know, who wasn't? I mean, the mind that he had and being around it and how my dad coached. And I played for him, and then I coached with him at Washington State 1 year at Wisconsin. Very a fiery Italian. I mean, my dad, he was the volcano. He'd be calm and then boom, it happened. And he could snap on ways that it was, you know, there. But I'd watch him, and he went at guys hard, but whenever he crossed the line, whether it was that moment, the next day in front of the team, or he'd come up separate, he'd say, "Forgive me, I made a mistake. I was wrong. I can't control my anger." He'd say to him, "Please forgive me. We need you. I screw up. You know, let's get on with it." And it, for me, it was a vicious cycle. That was every few days he goes, "I screwed up," you know, knock on my door, and I'd be like, "Mom, he's nuts. I'm transferring. I'm out of here." But the reality that when you watch a coach who you respect, who knows the game, a leader, say, "I was wrong. Forgive me. I made a mistake. I didn't mean, it's my problem. I'm going to keep pushing you." That was huge for me, Seth, because sometimes we think we always have to be right, because you don't want your players to know, "I don't know the answer," or I'm a little out of control, or a lot out of control at times. All of us who coaching's hard. It messes with you. And that to me was the best example I saw, partly due to his faith for sure. But the understanding of that. So I'd point to that first and foremost.
That's awesome.
Your dad called me one time, and I have no idea. I can't remember why. Huh. And I just become the head coach at Bowling Green, and we were just talking. I go, "Coach, give me something," right? I said, He goes, "In coaching, there's a lot of external things, TV show, shoe contract, ball contract." He goes, "Don't even think about any of that. Just win. Just get really good guys and win basketball games, have a great culture." Or I don't even know if he said culture. Culture is kind of a word now, you know. And I never forgot that. Like, that's because I think so many guys, like, want the benefit of being a coach, the external, not fight the internal. And I also think this, Coach, and I don't want you to comment on this, but I watched this for a while last night with Duke. And I thought to myself, you know what? These guys are kids in a uniform playing Duke. They're not diving. They're not. Is it? You had such success there, but the kids that are doing it now, other than what Clark maybe, didn't win a championship. Is it hard for them? You know, all the ancillary things about being at Virginia, you're great, national champ, great coach, blah 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 blah. But they didn't do it. You know what I mean? Is it hard to get them not to play Virginia, but to be Virginia players?
Yes. No, it always is. That's daily what you're about, who you recruit, but you have to constantly remind. And it gets harder when, you know, when you're winning, okay, it's good. And then you go through the stuff, then you really find out what do we got here. But it is, because people are always coming at you now and say, "All right, they have so many good things, the redone locker room, weight room and all that, but can you still have just that hunger and that humility? Like, this is what it is." And that, all those things are challenged. But again, you pour into that and you work at it, but that's daily. That's how you work, how the intensity is. And sometimes it takes hold and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, my dad just said, sorry to go along with this. My dad, I said, you know, these pillars of our program, there are five of them: humility, passion, unity, servanthood, thankfulness. He said, when you're really struggling, you got to lean on those. You know, they man, how you think. He said, but when it's going well, nothing changes. You still remain humble. You still are passionate as heck. You're still unified. You still serve each other, and you're thankful for what you learn. He's like, it just, and you know, all that stuff keeps turning over. And I think about that, and a simple idea, like, that's the stuff that matters. All the other stuff doesn't matter. What you get into your kids and how you work is there, and dealing with that. So I've been thankful, because he has a simple mindset towards it, and you know, goes beyond basketball. But that's helped me in the hard times. When you get beat a lot or you have bad losses, I think that shapes you more than sometimes the winning.
This is great stuff. We really appreciate you giving us a little time. It's fun watching your success. It's fun watching your teams play and play together on both sides, and yeah, I don't want to sound like Larry Brown. Play the right way. I mean,
Did you watch us against Gonzaga? Did you watch?
Yeah, I was going to hate.
And you know what? But here's the deal. What you did, you looked at it, you learned from it, you moved on from it, and you didn't overreact. I think the hardest thing to do as a coach, I say this all the time. I mean, I thought that Greg Gard did it great last year. They struggled early on. They won their last eight games. They won the Big Ten. The hardest thing to do as a coach is, when you're not playing well, to get your team back, to get your team trusting, to get your team believing, and figuring out. That's the fun of coach. Like, that's the thing I miss. All right. right? This didn't work. All right, what do we have here? All right, how can I figure out a way to put these guys in position to play to their strengths offensively and defensively? And that's what you've done. You've seen your team grow, which is so much fun. You know,
if it's a really fine line, boy. I tell you what's different this year. I don't know if we're still recording. If we are, so you can cut it whenever. Yeah. The atmosphere, you know, you where you guys have coached and going in, it's a different animal. You know, although some get a few thousand, but it is a way different atmosphere. I'm sure, I don't know if you're covering games in person or in your at home or wherever in the studios. It is different, real different. So
how about just your assistants are like 6 feet away? I mean, like, how do you communicate? Like, have you lost a player getting ready to put someone? Have you, like, Boeheim told me he lost a player in a game. He was ready to put a guy in. He couldn't find him.
Probably before the horn goes, no, you're, yeah. And, you know, halftime, you got your mask, you can't hear, and it's real. Your bench energy has really become important in how excitable they are. You watch football teams, and, you know, you almost have to – we joked around one day, give me your best chance, your claps from your AAU days, your high schools, you know. So we had our guys doing their takeover clap, you know, and all, you know, all those ones. All right, let me, okay, that might be good. We might need that. So it's good.
Thank you, Coach. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Stay safe.
Yep, you too. See you guys.
All right, that's awesome stuff, Seth Greenberg. He's tremendous. Great, man. I love watching his team and talking to him. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He really is. He just,
I mean, his comfortable is incredible. His dad, as we know, was a fierce, fierce, fierce competitor.
I was in church the year they won the championship. It was in Minnesota, and I happened to be sitting next to his uncle. And you in here, you know, throwing an extra one for Tony in Virginia? He goes, oh, Dan, it was 10 o'clock mass. He goes, I'll be here again at 11:30. I'll be here again at 5. You got to cover all bases in coaching, Seth. You got to cover the scouting. You got to cover the meals. And you got to cover church. Quick church story. We're playing Chris Kamen. Remember Chris Kamen?
Yeah, big Chris Kamen. Yeah, the big boy. Played in the league.
Yeah, we're playing him in the MAC tournament in Cleveland. And I go for a morning walk, and he's the best big guy I ever coached against, including, like, Weber and those guys, or just in college, whatever. So guy comes up to me and, you know, asking for money. So I'm like, hey, this is a big game. I took a 20 out. Now I'm making MAC salary. You know what I mean? I'm not making Seth Greenberg, Utah, or Seth Greenberg salary. So I handed him a $20 bill. He's like, oh, thanks. You know, we lost that game by exactly 20 points, Seth. We lost by exactly 20. So I'm glad I didn't give him 40 bucks. It would have been worse. Should have given him a single. But anyway, sometimes you got to go to God, baby. Sometimes. And Tony's brother, our uncle, did.
I think his uncle, I saw him on that same Final Four. I said hello to him, congratulated him on everything. And he was doom and gloom. I mean, he told me everything that could go wrong with their team.
Oh, yeah.
I said,
before the game.
They're really good.
Yeah. We're standing there in church after. And he's like, you know, Dan, these little skinny guys that play for Tony, I mean, how are they going to compete? Are they, you know, Kyle Guy weighs 150 pounds. And Jerome is like one of these guys that sits on the end of Auburn's bench. And, you know, it was all that kind of stuff.
I was literally walking. I stopped and said hello because I sat with him. I went after I got whacked. Every year I'd go to Virginia and 2 years to watch a practice. And 2 years in a row, he was there visiting Tony. And so, I mean, literally, I got the exact same thing. I mean, it was like I was ready to go. What do they play? UMBC? I mean, come on now. I mean, it's ridiculous. But hey, we really appreciate him coming on. And being with us. And that last thing, I am higher on Duke. I think they're fixed. They're not fixed, but at least at the end of a game, they have two guys they can go to. And I thought DJ Stewart is starting to show that, you know, with confidence, he's going to make some shots. And I thought the kid, Mikey Williams, was pretty good for him. Mark Williams, I should say.
Seth, in that same vein, before we leave, I love Jose Alvarado, man, for Georgia Tech. I love that guy. He and Cooper, Sharif Cooper, are the two most fun guys I've seen play basketball this year in the NCAA. Jose Alvarado is going to be playing in some league somewhere when he's 68 years old, making passes, doing all that. I love that kid. Love him.
I was disappointed with Georgia Tech, though.
Huh?
I was a little disappointed with Georgia Tech.
Me too.
Just to close they were out. Loose. They were loose with the ball.
Yeah, I agree. But, I agree.
And Kentucky?
Throw a sock at them.
Yeah, they're like the last 5 minutes of the game, they're a joke. They have no competitive spirit. They don't compete offensively. Their guard play is horrific. It's horrific. I mean, it's the only way to describe it. It's horrific. It's hard to watch them. It's hard to watch them. I thought defensively they did some things. They didn't overhelp, so they stayed home. I'm not as high on Alabama as everyone else. I mean, it's great. It's fun and gun, and they're making threes, and life is good. If you don't overhelp and make them shoot twos, if you take care of the basketball so you can set your defense, I think Oklahoma beats them.
I did the Oklahoma-Auburn game. I was shocked after the game when everybody started the next couple weeks talking about Alabama's defense, because I saw no defense in that game until the petty kid had real heart, toughness, got in a stance and just, you know, basically whooped Sharif Cooper in the last minute. But I'm with you. Let's see how this plays out. They're probably going to win the league, which, hey, look, we all take a ring. But I'm not as high either. But I will say this about Kentucky. I do think they're getting better. But so what? Right? You're at Kentucky. You got to win games. I mean, let's be honest, Seth.
100%.
Getting better at this time of year for Kentucky should be getting good enough to win the national championship, not good enough to win a conference road game. That's just what Kentucky is under John Calipari.
Yeah, yeah. So
thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to Taylor. This is the world's greatest podcast. Rate us if you don't mind. Give us a 5 because we deserve it. And don't be afraid to let us know what you think. At Dan Dockage is my Twitter. At Seth on Hoops is Seth.
Yeah, and you know what? If you rip us, that's all right. You know what?
Just we're big boys.
We're big boys. We might block you. We might not. We might say something back at you. Don't go to the principal's office. Don't turn us in. I mean, life goes on. I mean, and if you're an 18, 19, or 20-year-old, I'm going to treat you just like you're an adult.
There you go. There you go. Thanks, everybody.
Our work is done.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.